The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Ray. You are listening to a least worst of The Doctor Is In. We have no best of, but this is truly one of our least worst.
You want some bad news, Michael?
No.
What are you asking me?
You're the guru of the gray matter. I figured if anybody had it, you'd have the answer.
I can't give you any direction.
I think I'm going to have to change this channel. I'm sorry.
You're completely wrong.
I refuse to be wrong on two calls in a row.
Tell me I'm spot on or tell me I'm crazy as I'll get out.
I have no idea.
I have a six-month-old, so we'll be raising him according to Dr. Ray.
Talk about being a winner.
So, you want my question?
You ain't making any sense.
You're absolutely right. I just needed confirmation.
So what are you going to do about it, Dawn?
I'm calling you.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
I had somebody email me. Said, Dr. Ray, you know, you use those big words and you mispronounce them. So I called her back. I don't usually call her back, but I said, oh, yeah, talk about the epitome of hyperbole, you know? Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In, Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. Call-in number is 877-57-EQUAL. I sure like hearing from you folks. I really do. I mean, if you don't have something to say, it's okay. I'll make something out of it. If you don't have a question, I'll throw a question at you. If you just call to say, hello, how's everybody over there in Ohio? I'm being a psychologist, I'll say something like, it's very interesting you would ask that. How old were you when you were had your first social struggles? You know, something like that. That's what psychologists do, psychiatrists do, this to make people nervous at parties. People ask me, what do you do for a living? I say, well, I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. I tell them, I say, you're a psychologist? Yeah. Then they take a step back. It's automatic. As though somehow putting another 2 feet between us is going to keep me from being able to read their psyche. And then they say, I better watch what I say. You're going to be analyzing me. And, you know, it's important right there to put people at ease. So I say things like, I find it interesting you'd say that. Is there an insecurity issue here? Something you're struggling with from your potty training? How about your birth trauma? It could be, you know, coming from a safe, watery womb into the bright lights of existence. Okay, I don't say that. And I don't even tell them I'm a psychologist. They say, what do you do for a living? I say, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I'm going to tell you. That's what we say. A little bit of this, a little bit of that. 877-57-EQUAL is the number to call to get onto the program, whether you have a question about something in your life, person you're struggling to like, to get along with. You don't want to shun them, but you figure, well, I got to do something here. Or questions about approaching a particular circumstance a certain way, or dealing with an emotion, something you really struggle with. Maybe a faith issue as it intersects with psychology or some aspect of your personality. Sometimes it's a generic question. It isn't necessarily a particular matter in your life. It's just something you always wondered about. Doctor, what is this IQ? I mean, how do they measure IQ? And what does it mean anyway to say somebody has a genius IQ? Sometimes people call in just to help others out. I get that a lot. They'll call in and they'll say, comment on the previous caller you had from 2017. Remember that caller, Dr. Ray? It occurred at 1:14 in the afternoon on your show there. Call in to help. Sometimes they call in just with insights, and very nice insights about how they've lived their life or what they've learned. You folks are a reservoir of all kinds of good stuff for better living. You can call in and share that anytime you want. Get days taken off of purgatory. you get a double whammy. One, you get days taken off from purgatory because you're listening to me, because I can be irritating. Or two, you can be helpful to somebody else at the same time you're listening to me, and you get double. It's bonus points, double bonus points. At the risk of losing the humility award, which I have totally dominated for years now, crushing every piece of competition. My most recent book, and there's been several I haven't mentioned them, I just forget. But my most recent one is getting a lot of publicity. It's called How to Get Along with Almost Everybody. Now, why did I say almost? Well, you can't write a book that says how to get along with everybody, because that's a promise you can't keep. There's just some people you can't get along with. However, and I know you're thinking in your life, you already got the names of those people set up. Yeah, he must know my mother-in-law. That's not what I'm saying. If a person absolutely refuses to have any kind of relationship with you, then you may not be able to reach them. Okay. However, it's a statement I'm going to make. We can do a whole lot better. A whole lot better at getting along with people. They don't have to change for us to get along with them. We have to be less upset or less bothered or less offended, less hurt, less frustrated by who they are. If they're not going to be any different, and we keep demanding that they be different, then our relationship with them is going to be strained. There's no question about it, because they've just made remark number 122 that was snarky about my motherhood or fatherhood or parenthood or homeschooling or religion or political beliefs. And you can probably expect they're going to make another 100. But this ain't the lady down the street. This is your mother or your father or your brother or your cousin or your grandma. And at some level, you got to get along with them, because the social fallout would be too much. So the book deals with all kinds of ways that can help you be less disturbed by the behavior of people that you would categorize as difficult. Now, be careful. They may categorize you as difficult, too. That's the other thing. Difficult people don't realize they're difficult, or they don't admit they're difficult. Or I talk a lot about how you can lower your expectations so you're not so frustrated that they continue to be the way they are. I talk about how you can be less offendable. Christians should be the least easily offended of all people. And sometimes we're the easiest offended. So, easiest? Easiest offended. I'm offended that I misused that word. I talk about how to avoid arguments with people, that it's just easy to get in an argument with them. One of the simplest things to do is to get inside your head. Find out why they think the way they do. Why they perceive you the way they do. Why they look at religion the way they do. Doesn't mean you agree. Doesn't mean you condone it. Doesn't mean that you don't think it's ridiculous. But you're trying to get them to explain themselves. That's one. I talk a lot about watch your language. There's three phrases people throw around left and right, and when they do, the implication is, because I'm using these words, these people, whom I'm labeling so, are pretty much out of reach. They're pathological. They can't be gotten along with. And those three words and phrases are narcissist, toxic, and emotionally abusive. Somebody can be nasty, and they can attempt to put you down. Critical, snotty. They can try that. But the degree to which it's emotionally abusive, I make the case, is up to you. If you refuse to be quote-unquote emotionally abused, which means what you're saying is they get to my emotions. They batter my emotions. Dr. Ray, you're quite unrealistic. Because people can hurt you. People can be offensive. Well, of course they can. Absolutely. They can try. But the degree, how long you are bothered by it, 5 days, 5 hours, 5 minutes, is really up to you. It truly is. But the words we use convince us it's not. I've had people say to me, I've had a difficult marriage. I've had a difficult marriage. And I finally found out the problem. I went on the internet, and I just saw how my husband or my wife fits narcissist. Well, you haven't found out the problem. You know what the problem is. You've lived with that particular range of problems for however many years. You just put a label on it, and a label that may not be accurate. Because how do you explain that this narcissist is loved at church or gets along at work or has a whole bunch of friends that is not a problem with? No, it's better to say that person's difficult for you. But we fling these words around. Or toxic. Whoa, that's a favorite one of therapists. Toxic. I can't tell you how many parents have come to me. And these are decent people, as best I can figure, best I can evaluate. Decent people. But the kids want nothing to do with them now. Oh, they went to therapy, and they've described all their evils of their parents in their perceptions, of course. And the therapist said, well, it sounds like you need to set boundaries because your parents are toxic. Maybe some time away from your parents. Yeah, yeah. So the book, How to Get Along with Almost Everybody, is my newest book. Just came out a couple weeks ago. Getting a nice push. I've been able to talk to a lot of shows. It was just with Vanessa DeGarmo. On Epiphany, and she's a wonderful lady. We got a chance to talk a little bit. So I was really my lead-in act to my show. It's kind of nice. I got the frisbees and the beach balls going. Nobody ever gets that joke. You ever notice that? At these big rock concerts, when they have lead-in acts, usually somebody starts with these frisbees or beach balls, and they're just bouncing all through the crowd. So when you say, I got the frisbees and the beach balls going, that means you're kind of getting everybody excited for the main event. Okay, maybe that's an old illusion. And they're saying, Dr. Ray, maybe that was rock concerts when you were a kid. But did they even have music when you were a kid? It was just starting. Maybe it wasn't real complex. We didn't have all the notes of the scale then. So if you'd like a copy, you can obviously get it at EWTNRC.com, the catalog. EWTN's catalog. You go to Sophia Press, they got it. Amazon carries it. Or if you want a signed copy, discounted copy, go to my website, drray.com. All right, let's get to your calls here in a moment. Thanks for joining me.
The doctor will be with you in just a moment.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Strained or broken relationships are a given in most of our lives. Friends fall away, siblings drift apart, children sever ties with their parents, and despite our best efforts, these painful fissures are difficult to mend. Hi, I'm Dr. Ray. If you want to learn how to communicate better with the difficult people in your life and be a more easygoing, more forgiving person, check out my book, How to Get Along with Almost Everybody. Check it out. And all my other books on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
We are the pro-life generation. Passionate about building the culture of life in our healthcare and in our nation. But not all healthcare options are equally pro-life, and some provide morally objectionable procedures. CMF Curo is different. CMF Curo is a pro-life Catholic healthcare ministry providing a pathway for its members to build the culture of life in their healthcare choices, not destroy it. Learn more about CMF Curo at mycatholichealthcare.com. That's mycatholichealthcare.com.
The Doctor is In with Dr. Ray Guarendi will commence now. We assure you that this randomly selected program is one of Dr. Ray's least worst.
You just need to tune in to Dr. Ray, honey.
Wow.
He's got all the answers.
Well, thanks, Aunt Martha, for calling in. I appreciate that. Very kind of you. Do, do, do. I got this. Oh, by the way, let me give you a number because there's some calls coming in and they're screening them now, so we don't have them yet. The number is 800. No, it's not 800. That's if you want to get a hold of your phone provider. 877-573-7825. 877-57-EQUAL is the number. Bill left. He was Divine Mercy Radio. Why do we stop teaching the catechism after confirmation? Well, I guess that would depend upon where and when, Bill. I don't think it's an overall rule. What else could we do as the church to teach our people the faith better? Well, if you keep in mind that many folks' experience, many folks' exposure to our faith is the Sunday homily. That's pretty much where they are. If they don't listen to Catholic radio and they don't read, which unfortunately is kind of the majority of folks, the homilies. The homilies where it's at. We had a local priest give a 12-week homily series on why the Catholic Church is true. He gave the evidence for the Catholic Church. Oh, it was wildly well-received. Wildly well-received. So I think a lot of people don't know the why. And once they know the why, then they come closer to the church because they see her wisdom. All righty, let me see what I got. I want to take care of this one here. Our 33-year-old son has been suffering from depression and loss of his first job after graduation from college. Moved back into living with us now for 7 years. All right, so let's see. Graduated from college, maybe independent for a few years. Came back home when he was 26. We're trying to get him back on track, but he is resistant to change, refuses to go back to counseling. We love him. I would expect you do. He works full-time at a local retail chain, way below his happiness and potential. My husband is a retired professional and is now recently diagnosed with cancer. We are in our mid-60s. I'm getting ready to retire soon. We are exhausted with what to do now. We have talked, argued, had some very angry times. Can you give us some guidelines as to what kind of a plan we need to get him to move on with his life? Well, I don't know if he wants your plan. Whatever your plan is, he's going to resist. It seems, from the way you're describing this, he's quite comfortable with the way it is. I wish I had the stats on this. How many adults in their 20s are living at home, refusing to move on, refusing to become independent? And how many parents are allowing this? Out of fear, predominantly out of fear, because they are not confident that this person is going to land on their feet somehow, some way, if they set the conditions for living there. The plan would be, if you, I'm not telling you what to do because I'm not in your position. However, I can give you some generic observations. When you have somebody living there who has grown comfortable, beyond that, they've grown difficult to live with. If you leave them alone, if you just let them do what they want to do, well, you can live in some sort of uneasy truce at home. But the moment you try to nudge them into making some more adult-like decisions, they resist. And it isn't just passive resistance. It can be active, nasty resistance. Now, typically, here's the way it goes. He's been there 7 years. So the question needs to be asked, why 7 years? Has this matter not come up after 2 years of living there? When it became very apparent that he wasn't really all that enthused about moving on and out. So if you were in my office, I would say, what has kept you at this for the last 5 years? And typically, I hear the same answers. Hope, fear, thinking that there's going to be some way we're going to convince him that he needs to become independent. Given that, at some point, parents have had enough. Even parents who don't agree with each other. Not usually, but much of the time you have one spouse who says he's got to go. The other spouse says, no, we can't do that. But even at that, at some point, the level of frustration and exasperation becomes so high, or actually the level of mistreatment by the young adult becomes so hard to endure that both parents say, this has got to end. This has got to stop. We're so frustrated. You got to get out. That's typically the way it goes. This happens a lot, but you don't get 45-year-olds still living at home at the rate that 25-year-olds are still living at home. Usually things happen in those 20 years. Whether it's I steal your credit card, whether it's I cuss you out, whether it's I get violent, whether it becomes so very, very obvious that I've just lost my fifth job and I'm just living off of you, whether I refuse to pay you any rent, whether I don't help around here, whether I'm disrespectful, whatever it is. I wrote a book called Taught by 10. It's about 4 books ago. A psychologist's father learns from his 10 children. And I was sharing a lot of personal things about this, my own experience as a father. One of the later chapters, I said, I always wondered if any of my young adult children became irresponsible or difficult, still living at home, uncooperative, could I set the conditions that they had to go? Or would I be too nervous and skittish about that? And I found out that I could. And, of course, my wife and I were on the same page, so that helped. I found out that I could. And it was situations where they didn't necessarily have a place to land. But our rule always was, if you're going to be cooperative and pleasant, yeah, we can support you and help you out here until you kind of get on your own, which we did to my one son, who moved out when he was 26, but he was in school, he was pleasant, he was cooperative. Once he got his degree, once he got a job, he moved. But that was not the case with all of them. And here's probably what happens. After this goes on for several years, like in this case, it's been 7 years, there's hostility. There's overt, nasty hostility. And ultimately, the relationship just deteriorates. And I tell folks, you have to ask yourself a question. One, actually, you have to ask yourself two questions. One, do you want it to get to this point where this relationship is just hostile? It's nasty. Because it'll go downward in that trajectory. And two, am I helping or hurting this person? That's the key question you got to ask yourself. Are you helping by allowing this to go on? Because the longer it goes on, the more set it becomes. Are you helping or hurting? And if you're hurting, the likelihood becomes that bad things are going to happen. 877-57-EQUAL is the number to call. I'm Dr. Ray.
Thank you. 360 on 10 with Monsignor Charles Pope.
The 10th commandment, you shall not covet your neighbor's goods. This commandment is similar to the 9th because it uses the word covet, which means to inordinately or inappropriately desire something. And therefore, related to this are concepts that are familiar to us, such as greed or avarice, which is the undue passion for riches and power. Likewise, envy and jealousy are related here. In jealousy, you have something that I want, but I want it inappropriately or excessively. Envy, however, is a very dark thing because it wants to destroy that which is good in another person because it makes me look bad by comparison. And so in all these ways, the Lord is asking us to look very carefully to our desires because they can grow too expansive and lead us into very grave sins. The 10th commandment, you shall not covet your neighbor's goods.
For more about the 10 commandments, visit EWTNRC.com.
What is the great mystery of the Christian faith? It is, of course, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Even though the resurrection is an historical fact professed by the apostles and signified by the empty tomb, no one knows the exact hour Jesus emerged from the tomb. There were no eyewitnesses to describe the actual moment, only the result, the live appearances of Jesus to his disciples. It is an event that transcends and surpasses history, the Catholic Catechism tells us. The three persons of the Trinity, using their individual characteristics, acted as one in bringing about the resurrection. God the Father raised up the Son. God the Holy Spirit gave life to Jesus' dead humanity and called it to the glorious state of lordship. The Son effects his own resurrection by virtue of his divine power. He predicted the passion and declared that he had the power to lay down his life and take it up again. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
You are listening to the least worst of The Doctor Is In with Dr. A. Grandy. So please, no calls at this time.
Oh, question I get all the time. Dr. Ray, how did you raise 10 kids under 12? Well, we didn't let them in the house a lot of the time. Kind of felt sad around Christmas time. We had all the decorations up, you know, they were looking in. My wife's real soft, though. She always let them in. And I said, well, you know, honey, if you want to keep these decorations nice, you know, you could always tell when you got little kids because your Christmas tree is decorated 4 feet and above. Below that, it's either nothing at all or 622,000 ornaments per square inch because they want to help, and that's all they can reach. So I didn't have a Christmas tree that looked good for years and years and years and years. Now the grandkids come over, they do the same thing. I just go downtown and look at the trees that are decorated and think, wow, so that's what they're supposed to look like. Elizabeth, thank you, Elizabeth, for asking this question. Exactly like I wrote you and said, please call in and ask this question. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, how are you?
I am doing pretty good, my dear. How about yourself?
Great. I'm really excited about your new books coming out. My husband and I just love your work, but we really like listening to books in the car together. I know that it's a lot of work to make an audio book, but I was just wondering if you had any plans in the future to make your books, more of them, into audiobooks. I know a few of them are on Audible.
I got an audiobook that you can download from my website, drray.com. It's Discipline That Lasts a Lifetime, which is my most popular parenting book for discipline. So that's on audiobook. I just recorded two audiobooks, Raising Upright Kids in an Upside Down World, and Jesus the Master Psychologist. I recorded both of those down at EWTN, and they plan to make them available audio-wise. So you can get them through, I think, the EWTN catalog or Sophia Institute. This newest one, How to Get Along with Almost Everybody, I gotta believe is next in line to be put on audiobook. So they will be coming. I guess you just keep a lookout if you wish. The easiest thing to do, though, is probably you drive and have your husband read the book out loud.
If I could get him to do that, that would be great.
Well, it doesn't have really very many big words. He should probably be able to pronounce them. I put it in scratch and sniff for him.
Thank you, Dr. Ray.
All right, Elizabeth. Thank you, honey. Take care. Yeah, I know. She's absolutely right. They like the author to read the book, and he's probably not there. He doesn't listen to the show very often. It hurts his ears. But Tom Price, who is the director of radio programming, he is my editor when I'm reading the book. We go to a tiny little studio, and I read the book, and he interrupts me constantly. He just does. That's not how you pronounce that word. Okay, well, how would you pronounce it? Or I'll word fluff. Or I'll slur it. You can't understand it. So it takes, what's it take? It takes at least a day, maybe more, a day and a half to read a book if you want it done right. And Tom makes sure I do it right. I mean, if he didn't interrupt me, I'd get it done a lot sooner. The problem is you really probably wouldn't want to listen to it because it wouldn't be very good. All right, let's go to Gene from New York. Hi, Gene. I always feel very clean when I say hi, Gene.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. I have a question for you.
Yes, ma'am.
In this day and age, I'm hearing so many people are distanced from whether it's family or friends. And it concerns me. And I have a personal situation where my husband and his sister, both of whom were adopted into the family, different families. Over the years, he has held some hostility towards him. Because she was brought into the family first, and now it's rearing its ugly head later in their lives. I mean, she's 70, he's 68, and she's upset my husband to the point now where he just no longer wants to have a relationship with her, and I just feel so sad why I'm even saying, are you sure you're comfortable with this decision? Because it needs to be his. He's been the one that's been subjected to numerous occasions of her unkindness. I just think it's sad that so many people turn to just severing ties instead of at least attempting some type of resolution. And I wonder how I can encourage him. You know, I just don't think it's a healthy way to navigate life, you know.
The question, Gene, becomes, first of all, how nasty is she toward him? How irreconcilable is she toward him? If he would do anything at all, does she throw it back in his face?
I would have to say she's listening to respond and not listening to be heard. And I think the last.
All right, so she had a terrible.
All
right, so she's argumentative, and he argues with her.
He's not doing that anymore, and I think that's where she's reached out and said, "Well, I'll always be your sister if you ever need anything," but. Some pretty hurtful exchanges where she...
Is he a Catholic?
No.
Oh, so religion...
He just found out.
So religion doesn't mean a whole lot to him.
Yes, it does. He's spiritually faithful. He may not attend church, but he, believes in God.
Does he believe that he has to forgive?
Yes.
Well, then he does have to forgive. If he says Jesus is God... And I believe what Jesus tells me about living good lives, then I gotta forgive her. And maybe she's a jerk, maybe she's unpleasant, maybe she's argumentative, maybe she's snotty. Yeah, she's not just the most pleasant person. Okay, let's acknowledge all of that. And you can tell him that. You say, look, I'm not arguing with you that she isn't difficult. What I'm saying is you don't have to go to your grave with hostility toward her.
Right. I agree.
You have the ability to not let her get to you so much. Gene, what you're saying about our culture and everybody on everybody's nerves, I believe is terribly true. And we've become so self-centered and so self-absorbed that when you act certain ways that I don't like, well, just get out of my life. Well, wait a minute. This is his sister. This ain't the mail carrier. So... And if she's even said, okay, I'm going to try to do better by you, and he's thinking, no, she won't. She's always that way. Forget it. She's just a jerk. Well, ask him, then how do you square this with your belief in God and with your belief in Christ? How do you square this? Well, yeah, but you don't know how difficult she is. She's just, I put up with her for years. Okay, but here's the problem with you putting up with her for years. You've always let her get to you. Why? Why can't you just accept that your sister ain't the most pleasant person in the whole world and you can have some kind of relationship with her? Not the ushy-gushy one that you wish you could have had, but you can have some kind of relationship with her so you can at least be at peace about this. Because I'll tell you, Gene, you can approach it from the direction of, are you happy about this? Do you like being like this? Do you like being so angry at your sister? Do you like shutting her out of your life? Because inevitably, when we don't get along with somebody who is difficult, in many respects, we're unhappy about that. All right, Gene. Thank you for the call, honey. This
thank
is Dr.
You.
Ray? Yes,
have a
honey.
Great day, Dr. Ray.
Thank you. See, she didn't get that when I said hi, Gene. I feel very clean. Hi, Gene. Just would be bad if her name was Jack. Got to be careful there.
The Heart of the Interior Life with Elizabeth Jingle.
In St. Ignatius of Loyola's 14 Rules for the Discernment of Spirits, the fourth rule highlights the characteristics of spiritual desolation. One of those aspects of spiritual desolation is disquiet from various agitations and temptations. Agitating movements of the heart, temptations, and the disquiet are indications a person is experiencing spiritual desolation. Father Timothy Gallagher writes, here Ignatius pinpoints a further trait of spiritual desolation. Within the heaviness of the desolation, the person experiences a restless flow of agitating movements mixed with temptations that disquiet the person. If you have experienced this aspect of spiritual desolation, identifying it, understanding that it comes from the enemy, and rejecting it will hasten the return of interior peace.
For more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
You know, maybe we need to ask ourselves, do we really know Jesus? Maybe another way to ask that would be, how familiar are you with the Gospels? When I was living in D.C., I was on the plane taking a late flight home, sitting next to a young girl. She was probably 16, 17. I had my collar on, and we got talking, and she said somehow in the course of the conversation, she acknowledged that she was running away from home and was in the midst of an awful lot of difficulties that were going on. Her story seemed to be remarkably akin to the story of the prodigal son, which we just heard this past Sunday at Mass, huh? And so I started to speak a little bit about that with her. And I said, you sound a little bit like the younger son in the story of the prodigal son. And she looked at me like I was from Mars. And I said, are you not familiar with the story of the prodigal son? And she says, no, never heard it. And I just looked at her and I says, oh my goodness, are you in for a wonderful evening?
You're listening to the least worst of The Doctor Is In with Dr. Ray Guarendi. So please, no calls at this time.
I saw, and I don't know if this is legit, that W.R. Grace was thinking of buying the Fuller Brush Company and Mary Kay Cosmetics, and then they were going to merge with Hale Products. Name of the company would be Hail Mary Fuller Grace. Nice company. Blaze from Nebraska. Hi, Blaze.
Hi.
Thanks for the call.
How are you?
Still quick, and I still got the punches, in the words of Muhammad Ali.
So I had just had a quick question regarding, I had a Spirit Catholic Radio on while I'm driving here, and I just had a question about the adult children living at home.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think there's maybe some other factors, just considering the high cost of living and everything, it is somewhat objectively more difficult to become independent now than it ever has been within the U.S.
No question. Did you notice I said it depends upon if they're living at home, are they cooperative? Are they pleasant? I said my son lived at home to 26. He was cooperative. He was pleasant. He was in school. We were helping him get a start. Yeah, no problem whatsoever. That's not the question, Blaze. Most of the time when the parents call here or they come to my office, it's because this adult that's living at home is lazy or disrespectful or uncooperative or unpleasant. See, that's the variables that you take into account. If it's a financial situation where the person says, yeah, I'd like to live at home because I'd like to save up some money so that I can buy my own place or rent a bigger place, and the person is cooperative and helpful around the house, well, shoot, what's the problem with that?
Okay.
Is that's the point you're making, right?
Yeah, that makes more sense.
Sure, yeah. It's not a categorical, look, when you're 23, get out. I'm Italian. I was at home variably till age 30. Now, granted, I was all over the place. I was at college, and I was living at various places, but my main abode was still at home. And for Italians, I think that was the rule. I think I had to stay with my mom till 30 or something like that.
Okay. Thank you very much for taking time for me.
Sure, Blaze. I appreciate it, son. Thank you. See, that's the thing. When you're my age, you start calling everybody son. Guy's 50 years old. I go, hey, appreciate it, son. Ed from Kalamazoo, we got a situation. This is kind of relates to what Blaze was saying, that we got a situation that, in fact, they got a guy that's 33, and I don't even know if he's still living at home, but there's a lot of bailing out going on, whole lot of bailing out. Hi, Ed.
Hey, thanks, Dr. Ray, and I think we could have numerous sessions about this, but we'll try to wrap it up in just a couple of minutes. And so, yeah, our youngest is 33 years old, raised in a Catholic family, and one time had what I would call strong Catholic faith. And anyway, you know, life has gone on, and he's 33 years old now, and about 2.5 years ago, it came to our attention that, you know, he was suffering from a drug addiction, and it was crack cocaine, and we sent him off to rehab, and after rehab, at 11 days later, he had another relapse. Anyways, it goes back further than that. Travis, our son has always had, social issues. I've known that ever since he's a little boy, and my wife and I both think maybe he has some sort of mental disorder here, too. I don't know, but anyway, so he's had these ups and downs, and he does not live at home. He has his own house, and we helped him buy it, but he paid us all back. It was great. But, you know, in the past few years, if we wouldn't have been there to bail him out, he would have lost his house to complicate things. He's a type 1 diabetic, so he has real medical needs. He needs his insulin or he won't live. And he works for my wife at her business full-time, and he wouldn't be employable anywhere else with the, you know, amount of work that he misses due to his habits. And anyway, I just wonder if we're enabling him, and if we need to let him hit rock bottom, if that costs him financially and us financially by him losing us business, losing his job, and losing us health insurance, and, you know, if we have to buy him insulin later on or whatever to help him get by. I don't know. I'm just kind of beside myself and just, again, wondering if we're just enabling him to let him keep going. He doesn't want to go back to rehab. He won't go to AA or any other kind of meetings, so... it's caused difficulty with my wife and I because we don't always agree on what to do. And again, I'm questioning what the best step forward is.
How much you've been bailing him out?
How would I say bailing out? Probably to the tune of, I don't even know the exact number because my wife has taken over control of his finances, but If you're looking for dollar figure, it's somewhere between $5,000 and $10,000 is probably what he owes us in the rears. But and whether we ever see that money,
probably not.
But you know, no.
It's not that much money.
Salvation.
You know, I was expecting you to say $50,000 to $100,000.
No, not that bad. I've got my limits too.
Well, you tapped into something here, Ed. You kind of said it sort of in passing, but your wife and you are not on the same page in regarding how much to sustain your son.
Mm-hmm.
Is he still presently under the thrall of cocaine?
He had an episode last week. For the most part, he's gotten away from that, and he swapped crack cocaine for meth. Dude,
oh, boy.
For reasons he said it's cheaper. Yeah, what an improvement,
boy.
Huh?
So what he said was, I want to do this. I just don't want to spend that much money.
Sort of, yeah. Uh-huh. There's always got to be some kind of vice, it seems like.
Does he come to work for you reliably?
I would say no. I'd say probably it's not uncommon for him to miss a day every week, if not. Certainly, I don't think more than 2 weeks goes by where he doesn't miss a day of work.
If he were not your son, would you fire him?
Yes.
Okay. The question becomes this, Ed. You said hit rock bottom. What do you think that would mean? Are you talking overdose? Are you talking diabetic coma? Are you talking suicide? What would rock bottom be in his situation?
I think suicide would be end of the game. I'm talking rock bottom. Loses home, loses health insurance, living on the street.
Well, okay, then you're paying for that, right? You're paying for his house payment, his health insurance. You're doing all that?
Well, when he misses, he's been doing better because my wife took over management. My wife writes the payroll, and what she did is probably not legal, but she took over management of his money. And so now his house payments are being paid, but there's still some payments in arrears that we did. You know, it's part of that $5,000 to $10,000 I told you about.
But, and he, of course, doesn't want to go.
Payments now, but
he doesn't want to go into any kind of rehab. No kind of rehab, right, Ed?
He went to rehab once, but he doesn't want to have anything to do with it again. And
okay,
he won't even call into like AA meetings or any other kind of meetings.
So he's determined. I just want to take this stuff. I like what it does for me, and I can function. That just seems to be his modus operandi.
I think that's a good way to say it. I think he sees himself as functional.
Mm-hmm. But I think it's going to come down to a decision for you and your wife, which is how much are we going to continue? Now, again, if you say we're not paying his bills, he's paying his bills, we're just managing his money, that's a different ballgame. You're not mm-hmm. putting out your own money. But my guess is you're adding your own money to the whole thing. So it's...
Not so much lately.
Okay.
We were, but not so much lately since my wife took over management of his money. But, he can't do that by himself. He hasn't shown the discipline to do that by himself.
Well, he's probably too off and on intoxicated. Given that, you say to yourself, we found a compromise to keep this kid from totally self-destructing. Kid, he's not a kid. Mm-hmm. On the other hand... At some point, even if this isn't good enough, then we're going to have to decide how much are we going to sustain him.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always the risk. There is always the risk when somebody acts completely irresponsibly. And the only way that they've kept from self-destructing is that the parents have continued to put props underneath them.
Mm-hmm.
Question becomes, how long are you going to do it? That's really the question. And can you live with, if you don't do it, you know, can you live with it? You say he'll become homeless. What would happen then? Would he go to a shelter? What would he do? Would he say, I can't live this way? I've really blown it. What would he do? You don't know. You can predict maybe. But that's really what it comes down to. You just got to say to yourself, we've got these options in front of us. Here's the pros. Here's the cons. And what happens if our current arrangement isn't going to work? And I suspect it's not, Ed. I got to tell you that. Boy, I'm way past break. I'm going to have to hurry here. I suspect it's not, which by that I mean if your son is determined to live his lifestyle, then I would suspect it wouldn't be unusual, even with your wife handling his finances, that he gets into more financial trouble. Hopefully not with his dealer, because they play rough. So given that, then you're going to be forced with a decision. Now it's back on us again to support. How long are we going to do this, and is it good for our son? That's really mm-hmm. that really becomes a question. Sadly, when you've got a child who does this, and boy, there's just so many more of these now. Our culture is just unraveling. There's so many more of these now that you're looking at a future that's dark. It's cloudy. You don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And if your wife is saying, I couldn't live if anything bad happens to him. I couldn't live it. I couldn't handle it. Well, then she's got herself basically emotionally blackmailed, because now if the ultimate risk stops her from making any kind of decisions other than we've just got to continue to sustain him, then you're painting yourself into a corner, stuck. You know.
Yeah.
So that's what's facing me, my friend.
I can tell you that, you know, from my wife's perspective, she had a brother that died of a drug overdose, and
there
I know one thing that weighs heavy on her mind is the last conversation she had had with him while he was still alive is, I don't care if I ever talk to you again, and then next thing you know, he's dead. So of course she doesn't want that with their son, and I don't either.
There it is, that heavy emotional cloud that is so often in place. So you can say, I don't want that, but then the next question is, can I stop it? That's the question.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ed. Thank you for the call. This is Dr. Ray.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Steve and Janet Ray here, announcing we are back in the Holy Land, ready to introduce you to our favorite places in the world, the land where God walked. Mass at the most holy sites, pray the mysteries of the rosary where they happened, and experience the Bible in vivid color. We have led over 100 groups through this land, sharing the whole story of salvation. Of all the pilgrimages in all of the world, this is the one you should not miss.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at AveMariaRadio.net.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I come from the other side of the tracks. See? My uncle used to have slot machines. Put one nickel in and it's emptied. And I brought him home in a bag. And my mother looked at me. Where did you get all that money? I said, I won them. You didn't win them. He fixed the machine. I didn't care if he fixed the machine or not, you know?
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Our world is filled with noise, work, screens, and endless demands. But Christ calls us to step away and listen. The nonprofit Revive app offers one-on-one virtual conversations with certified spiritual companions who help you deepen your relationship with God, discern His will, and find peace. If even the saints needed spiritual guidance, how much more do we? Your first two sessions are free. Download the Revive app today. That's R-E-V-I-V, and then the number 3.
You are listening to a least worst of The Doctor Is In. We have no best of. Oh, boy. I went massively past break, so I want to talk to Ann real quick from Oregon. She called 6 months ago about a relationship with her husband, verbal and physical assault. Hi, Ann. Oh, Eric's talking to her. All right, is he taking... Oh, Ann left? She went to give us an update. Okay, we got another call, but we'll have to make it quick, though, to get her in. Ann left. She went to give us an update. She and her husband have separated. They are living apart now. The church doesn't ask someone to live in a physically abusive situation. They call it separation of bread and board. And many people think, okay, we have to just put up with anything. No, the church says you don't have to risk your welfare, the welfare of your children, or anything like that. However, whether the marriage is a valid one or not has to be looked at. I've had many clients who have found out things about their spouse that they did not know at the time of the marriage. Sometimes it was same-sex attraction that the spouse struggled with, and they didn't know it. Or it was severe alcoholism that was kept kind of under wraps or under control, but there was a long history of it. Or pornography. And these were things that would have been an impediment to a full, free, faithful commitment. And that's what the church looks at. When you commit to this marriage, is it with full knowledge? Or, okay, we can't have full knowledge. But is it with a mature knowledge of who you're committing to, under what circumstances is that person capable of committing. For example, somebody who says, yeah, I'll raise the kids Catholic, and they were lying. They had no intention to raise the kids Catholic. And they admitted that later. Would that have affected your decision to marry the person? Quite likely. So the church looks at all that. But got to run. Thank you so much for joining me tomorrow, Look Back Friday. Right now, got to leave you. Thanks, Andrew. Thanks, Eric. Walk with God. Your eternal walk.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRRay.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.